Chapter 3. World. There is, it is true, a great difference between new inventions and projects, between improvement of manufactures or lands which tend to the immediate benefit of the public, and employing of the poor, and projects framed by subtle heads with a sort of a deceptio vices and legerdemain, to bring people to run needless and unusual hazards. I grant it, and give a due preference to the first. And yet success has so sanctified some of those other sorts of projects, that it would be a kind of blasphemy against fortune to disallow them. Witness Sir William Phipps' voyage to the wreck. It was a mere project, a lottery of 100,000 to 1 odds, a hazard which, if it had failed, everybody would have been ashamed to have owned themselves concerned in. A voyage that would have been as much ridiculed as Don Quixote's adventure upon the windmill. Bless us! That folks should go 3,000 miles, to angle in the open sea for pieces of 8. Why, they would have made ballads of it, and the merchants would have said of every unlikely adventure, it was like Phipps' wreck voyage. But it had success, and who reflects upon the project? Nothing so partial as the laws of fate, erecting blockheads to suppress the great. Sir Francis Drake, the Spanish plate fleet won. He had been a pirate, if he had got none. Sir Walter Raleigh strove, but missed the plate, and therefore died a traitor to the state. Endeavor bears a value more or less, just as 'tis recommended by success. The lucky coxcomb every man will prize, and prosperous actions always pass for wise. However, this sort of projects comes under no reflection, as to their honesty, save that there is a kind of honesty a man owes to himself, and to his family, that prohibits him throwing away his estate in impracticable improbable adventures. But still some hit, even of the most unlikely, of which this was one of Sir William Phipps, who brought home a cargo of silver of near 200,000 pounds sterling, in pieces of 8, fished up out of the open sea, remote from any shore, from an old Spanish ship which had been sunk above 40 years. The history of projects. When I speak of writing a history of projects, I do not mean either of the introduction of, or continuing, necessary inventions, or the improvement of arts and sciences before known, but a short account of projects and projecting, as the word is allowed in the general acceptation at this present time, and I need not go far back for the original of the practice. Invention of arts, with engines and handicraft instruments for their improvement, requires a chronology as far back as the eldest son of Adam, and has to this day afforded some new discovery in every age. The building of the ark by Noah, so far as you will allow it a human work, was the first project I read of, and, no question, seemed so ridiculous to the graver heads of that wise, though wicked, age that poor Noah was sufficiently bantered for it. And, had he not been set on work by a very peculiar direction from heaven, the good old man would certainly have been laughed out of it as a most senseless, ridiculous project. The building of Babel was a right project, for indeed the true definition of a project, according to modern acceptation, is, as is said before, a vast undertaking, too big to be managed, and therefore likely enough to come to nothing. And yet, as great as they are, it is certainly true of them all, even as the projectors propose, that, according to the old tale, if so many eggs are hatched, there will be so many chickens, and those chickens may lay so many eggs more, and those eggs produce so many chickens more, and so on. Thus it was most certainly true that, if the people of the old world could have built a house up to heaven, they should never be drowned again on earth, and they only had forgot to measure the height. That is, as in other projects, it only miscarried, or else it would have succeeded. And yet, when all is done, that very building, and the incredible height it was carried, is a demonstration of the vast knowledge of that infant age of the world, who had no advantage of the experiments or invention of any before themselves. Thus when our fathers, touched with guilt, that huge stupendous staircase built, We mock, indeed, the fruitless enterprise, for fruitless actions seldom pass for wise. But were the mighty ruins left, they'd show to what degree that untaught age did know. I believe a very diverting account might be given of this, but I shall not attempt it. Some are apt to say with Solomon, no new thing happens under the sun, but what is, has been. Yet I make no question but some considerable discovery has been made in these latter ages, and inventions of human origin produced, which the world was ever without before, either in whole or in part. And I refer only to two cardinal points, the use of the lodestone at sea, and the use of gunpowder and guns. Both which, as to the inventing part, I believe the world owes as absolutely to those particular ages as it does the working in brass and iron to Tubal Cain, or the inventing of music to Jubal, his brother. As to engines and instruments for handicraftsmen, this age, I dare say, can show such as never were so much as thought of, much less imitated before. For I do not call it a real invention which has something before done like it, I account that more properly an improvement. For handicraft instruments, I know none owes more to true genuine contrivance, without borrowing from any former use, than a mechanic engine contrived in our time called a knitting frame, which, built with admirable symmetry, works really with a very happy success, and may be observed by the curious to have a more than ordinary composition, for which I refer to the engine itself, to be seen in every stocking weaver's garret. I shall trace the original of the projecting humor that now reigns no farther back than the year 1680, dating its birth as a monster then, though by times it had indeed something of life in the time of the late Civil War. I allow, no age has been altogether without something of this nature, and some very happy projects are left to us as a taste of their success, as the water houses for supplying of the city of London with water, and, since that, the New River both very considerable undertakings, and perfect projects, adventured on the risk of success. In the reign of King Charles I, infinite projects were set on foot for raising money without a parliament, oppressing by monopolies and privy seals. But these are excluded our scheme as irregularities, for thus the French are as fruitful in projects as we, and these are rather stratagems than projects. After the fire of London, the contrivance of an engine to quench fires was a project the author was said to get well by, and we have found to be very useful. But about the year 1680 began the art and mystery of projecting to creep into the world. Prince Rupert, uncle to King Charles II, gave great encouragement to that part of it that respects engines and mechanical motions, and Bishop Wilkins added as much of the theory to it as writing a book could do. The prince has left us a medal called by his name, and the first project upon that was, as I remember, casting of guns of that metal, and boring them done both by a peculiar method of his own, and which died with him, to the great loss of the undertaker, who to that purpose had, with no small charge, erected a water mill at Hackney Marsh, known by the name of the Temple Mill, which mill very happily performed all parts of the work, and I have seen some of those guns on board the Royal Charles, a first-rate ship, being of a reddish color, different either from brass or copper. I have heard some reasons of state assigned why that project was not permitted to go forward, but I omit them, because I have no good authority for them. After this we saw a floating machine, to be wrought with horses, for the towing of great ships both against wind and tide, and another for the raising of ballast, which, as unperforming engines, had the honor of being made, exposed, tried, and laid by before the prince died. If thus we introduce it into the world under the conduct of that prince, when he died it was left a hopeless brat, and had hardly any hand to own it, till the wreck voyage before noted, performed so happily by Captain Phipps, afterwards Sir William, whose strange performance set a great many heads on work, to contrive something for themselves. He was immediately followed by my Lord Mordaunt, Sir John Narborough, and others from several parts, whose success made them soon weary of the work. the project of the penny post, so well known and still practiced, I cannot omit, nor the contriver, Mr. Dockra, who has had the honor to have the injury done him in that affair repaired in some measure by the public justice of the Parliament. And, the experiment proving it to be a noble and useful design, the author must be remembered, wherever mention is made of that affair, to his very great reputation. It was, no question, a great hardship for a man to be master of so fine a thought that had both the essential ends of a project in it, public good and private want, and that the public should reap the benefit, and the author be left out, the injustice of which, no doubt, discouraged many a good design. But since an alteration in public circumstances has recovered the lost attribute of justice, the like is not to be feared. And Mr. Dockra has had the satisfaction to see the former injury disowned, and an honorable return made, even by them who did not the injury, in bare respect to his ingenuity. A while before this, several people, under the patronage of some great persons, had engaged in planting of foreign colonies, as William Penn, the Lord Shaftesbury, Dr. Cox, and others, in Pennsylvania, Carolina, East, and West Jersey, and the like places, which I do not call projects, because it was only prosecuting what had been formerly begun. But here began the forming of public joint stocks, which, together with the East India, African, and Hudson's Bay Companies, before established, begot a new trade, which we call by a new name stock jobbing, which was at first only the simple occasional transferring of interest and shares from one to another, as persons alienated their estates, but by the industry of the exchange brokers, who got the business into their hands, it became a trade, and one perhaps managed with the greatest intrigue, artifice, and trick that ever anything that appeared with a face of honesty could be handled with. For while the brokers held the box, they made the whole exchange the gamesters, and raised and lowered the prices of stocks as they pleased, and always had both buyers and sellers who stood ready innocently to commit their money to the mercy of their mercenary tongues. This upstart of a trade, having tasted the sweetness of success which generally attends a novel proposal, introduces the illegitimate wandering object I speak of, as a proper engine to find work for the brokers. Thus stock jobbing nursed projecting, and projecting, in return, has very diligently pimped for its foster parent, till both are arrived to be public grievances, and indeed are now almost grown scandalous. Of projectors. Man is the worst of all God's creatures to shift for himself. No other animal is ever starved to death. Nature without has provided them both food and clothes, and nature within has placed an instinct that never fails to direct them to proper means for a supply. But man must either work or starve, slave or die. He has indeed reason given him to direct him, and few who follow the dictates of that reason come to such unhappy exigences. But when by the errors of a man's youth he has reduced himself to such a degree of distress as to be absolutely without three things, money, friends, and health, he dies in a ditch, or in some worse place, a hospital. 10,000 ways there are to bring a man to this, and but very few to bring him out again. Death is the universal deliverer, and therefore some who want courage to bear what they see before them hang themselves for fear. For certainly self-destruction is the effect of cowardice in the highest extreme. Others break the bounds of laws to satisfy that general law of nature, and turn open thieves, housebreakers, highwaymen, clippers, coiners, and see till they run the length of the gallows, and get a deliverance the nearest way at St. Tyburn. Others, being masters of more cunning than their neighbors, turn their thoughts to private methods of trick and cheat, a modern way of thieving every jot as criminal, and in some degree worse than the other, by which honest men are gulled with fair pretenses to part from their money, and then left to take their course with the author, who skulks behind the curtain of a protection, or in the minter friars, and bids defiance as well to honesty as the law. others, yet urged by the same necessity, turned their thoughts to honest invention, founded upon the platform of ingenuity and integrity. These two last sorts are those we call projectors. And as there was always more geese than swans, the number of the latter are very inconsiderable in comparison of the former, and as the greater number denominates the less, the just contempt we have of the former sort bespeters the other, who, like cuckolds, bear the reproach of other people's crimes. A mere projector, then, is a contemptible thing, driven by his own desperate fortune to such a strait that he must be delivered by a miracle, or starve. And when he has beat his brains for some such miracle in vain, he finds no remedy but to paint up some bauble or other, as players make puppets talk big, to show like a strange thing, and then cry it up for a new invention. Gets a patent for it, divides it in two shares, and they must be sold. Ways and means are not wanting to swell the new whim to a vast magnitude. Thousands and hundreds of thousands are the least of his discourse, and sometimes millions, till the ambition of some honest coxcomb is wheedled to part with his money for it, and then, nascent or ridiculous muss, the adventurer is left to carry on the project, and the projector laughs at him. The diver shall walk at the bottom of the Thames, the saltpeter maker shall build Tom T.D.'s pond in two houses, the engineers build models and windmills to draw water, till funds are raised to carry it on by men who have more money than brains, and then good night patent and invention. The projector has done his business and is gone. But the honest projector is he who, having by fair and plain principles of sense, honesty, and ingenuity brought any contrivance to a suitable perfection, makes out what he pretends to, picks nobody's pocket, puts his project in execution, and contents himself with the real produce as the profit of his invention. Of banks. Banks, without question, if rightly managed are, or may be, of great advantage, especially to a trading people, as the English are, and, among many others, this is one particular case in which that benefit appears, that they bring down the interest of money, and take from the goldsmiths, scriveners, and others, who have command of running cash, their most delicious trade of making advantage of the necessities of the merchant in extravagant discounts, and premiums for advance of money, when either large customs or foreign remittances call for disbursements beyond his common ability, for by the easiness of terms on which the merchant may have money, he is. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.